to A Killer Crawl Space. This is episode 32. This case has been covered before on a few other podcasts and some like YouTube channels. Like, I'm probably not going to add anything different to it besides you're just going to be hearing the story told with my voice. This episode focuses on Beverly Potts. But she was born April 15th, 1941 in Cleveland, Ohio. She would go missing on August 24th, 1951. She was described as a shy, quiet, and a good girl for her age. It was said she was tall for her age as well. I think I remember something about she being like 4 foot 10, 11, somewhere through there. But she loved performing arts, but on the day she disappeared, one of her friends and her went to a local show. It was an annual summer children's performance that would be held at a local park called Hallran Park, which was less than a quarter mile from their houses. The park was considered to be dangerous, though, after dark, and it has been stated about 1,500 people were at this show. Anyways, the two girls would ride their bikes to the park around 7 p.m. Roughly an hour later, they decided it would be easier to get through the crowd on foot, so they decided to return their bikes home. They'd come back to the show around 8:30, and not shortly after, around 8:45, Beverly's friend would state she needed to head home before dark because she had promised her parents she'd be back before dark. And Beverly told her she had been given permission to stay for the entire show. The show was supposed to last until sometime after 9 p.m. Beverly's family would leave on her own and go home, leaving Beverly in the crowd watching the performances. The show would end shortly after 9 p.m., and Beverly never returned home. When she did not return home at 10 p.m., her family would go on a search of the area, but would not be able to locate her. They had contacted the police right after. A lot of tips would come in. They had seen a girl that looked like Beverly talking to two young men who were driving an old beat-up 1936 Dodge Coupe. The encounter was anywhere between 8:30 to 9:30 p.m., but nobody saw her get in the vehicle. It would have had to have been closer to 9, if not after, because Beverly's friend left the performance around 8:45, so she would have seen the two young men in the vehicle before leaving. Unless the girl people reported was not actually Beverly. But the cops did not feel this was a very good tip, because it had come from a young girl, and it seemed nobody else reported something like this. And from my understanding, there was also Beverly's friend said that she saw like a lady with Beverly, and it looked like her her hand was on her shoulder, and that she'd never seen this woman before. So, yeah, don't know how true that is, you know, if it was Beverly, or it just was the woman was just close to Beverly, you know, while she was walking away. But it had also been stated that a lot of these tips coming in had to be taken with a grain of salt, because the police didn't know if people were making up the story. And they did interview a lot of young children around Beverly's age a few weeks after her disappearance, basically when school started back in. And they felt there were, like I said, around 1,500 people there, and it'd be hard for people to remember one little girl out of all those people. So it's very possible the witness could say, hey, yeah, I saw a girl do this or this, but in reality the story is not true, or it's another girl they saw instead. But one tip they did feel was reliable was around 9:30 p.m. after the show had ended. A teenage boy who knew Beverly saw her walking because she had jumped out of his way because he was riding a bike. The boy recognized her from how she walked because she had a unique walk. They say that it was like a duck walk, but the police felt this was a very good tip and seemed to have some credibility to it, because where he mentioned her funny way she walked. And he said he knew it was her from behind, and knew it was her just because of that walk. Like I said, the walk would be described as a duck walk with her feet, you know, out. But he was just a few feet from her, so that helps being able to identify her better. But he assumed she was walking home, and he said she was alone. Once the police were brought in, they did not come up with anything in the search, even though they went door to door in the nearby neighborhoods, tracing suspicious cars, searching vacant lots. And from my understanding, they even searched like an open railroad cars and all that. They would also investigate a large amount of telephone tips, but none provided any solid leads. There was also a plan to search all the houses door to door, because the garages in the area were dirt floors, but was canceled once the information got leaked out. I've read that they've all been paved since then, and it would cost a lot of money to do the searches of all the houses. So I'm kind of wondering if they maybe think that it was a local person that done this. But Beverly's family would be cleared of suspects, and the police felt her home life was loving and happy, so they felt she didn't run away. But it's mentioned a man called the family about 2 months after Beverly's disappearance, claiming he wanted $25,000 and he'd return Beverly home safely. His directions were simple. Don't get the cops involved, and only for Beverly's mom to drop the money off at an address he provided. The address was not too far from their house. The family would notify the police, and one of the detectives addressed up for the woman and went to the address given on the day the meetup was supposed to happen on. It turned out the man didn't live at that house, and he wasn't involved in anything. It was just an attempt of him trying to make some cash, apparently. From my understanding, like, when he saw the cop, because I'm guessing this cop was a tall guy, that he basically took off and, you know, he got caught and all that. But it was known that Beverly was really shy, like I had stated earlier in the episode, but they said she was really shy around men and older boys, and that she was cautious of strangers. So this would make the police think that she had been lured into a nearby house or a car with someone she might have known. There is speculation the unknown suspect might have offered her a babysitting job, even though, despite her age, she was also known to be a babysitter. So, and they also think maybe the person, you know, wanted her to do like an errand. But sadly, Beverly's mother would pass away from a broken heart with not knowing where her daughter was at in 1956. And Beverly's father would pass away in 1970. But there was a theory that a neighbor killed her in one of the local houses. And this search would take place in 1973. So see, we're already fast forwarding from 51 to 73. And at this house in 1973, it was an auto body shop, but nothing was found, sadly. Now I'm going to get into some details of the suspects and other odd things that occurred after Beverly's disappearance, but we're going to jump back to 1955, because this gentleman, Harvey Lee Rush, was a drifter and was from Cleveland. And like I said, in 1955, he would tell police while in California that he killed Beverly after getting her to come to a nearby bridge with candy. The only problem is he placed the murder in 1952. She went missing in 1951. He would take his story back shortly after being sent back to Cleveland. He said he only confessed so he could get back to his hometown. Now we're going to jump back to 1980. Two retired Cleveland police detectives would come out in 1980 to reveal that in 1974 they had received a tip from a local attorney with a client who had a brother that supposedly confessed to kidnapping Beverly. They would locate the man and talk with him. The unnamed man would admit to living near the park back then in 1951 when Beverly disappeared. He claimed as well that he would pick up young girls and molest them. He did not remember kidnapping Beverly, but said he would get flashes of memory of a girl named Beverly. The two detectives felt he was the man they were looking for, but the county prosecutor would not take the case due to the lack of evidence. And a man by the name of William Henry Redmond, he was from Ohio as well, used to be a carnival worker. He would go to prison in 1988 for murdering a girl in 1951 in Pennsylvania. The police would question him, and he would not make a statement on it. He was in the area at the time, and he had been known of child molestation convictions dating back to 1935 when he was a young teenage boy. But he would die in 1992. In 1994, a letter would be discovered under carpet in a house in Cleveland. The letter was written by a woman, and in the letter it claimed she had witnessed her husband getting rid of Beverly's body in their furnace. The police would be able to track the lady down. They would talk with her on this letter that was found. She would tell them the reason she wrote the letter was a revenge fantasy against her abusive husband. More letters would surface in early 2000. The letters would be sent to a reporter at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and from my understanding there was 4 letters in total. It doesn't give much information on the first letter, but the second letter is mentioned where the writer promised that upon his death, his lawyer would forward a sealed brown envelope. Inside would present a letter containing all the details of what happened in Beverly back in 1951, plus a rare coin she had in a small purse she had. The third letter would promise that if he was still living on the anniversary date, that he would turn himself in at the Halloran Park at noon. He wanted the reporter and the police to be there because he felt 50 years was long enough to live with what he had done. And the fourth letter would consist of this. Sorry, I won't be able to keep the appointment of the 24th. I was going to give myself up at the fire station at the Halloran Park at noon. I have to go to a nursing home, as I can't keep going on by myself. I have already lived longer than doctors gave me to live. These letters raise some questions for sure. Why not turn himself in from the nursing home? From my understanding, the police detective and prosecutor signed to the case had went on record saying a very old man and ill man would not be sent to prison. Unless the unknown writer does not believe them, and he just didn't want to serve time in prison. But he mentions a rare coin she had on her at the time she disappeared. What kind of coin was this, is my question. Like, I wasn't born back then, so not sure what kind of coins were made back then, besides, you know, just the normal coins that we know of today. I know there's various ones, because you had, like, the wheat pennies and all that. But, like, what coins back then are rare today? Unless it could have been one, you know, before, you know, 1951. And was there proof or knowledge of this coin to have been on her back then as well? But I'm assuming it might have not been a rare coin back then, so it could have been a common coin at that time. And, like I said, that coin might not have been from that time period either. Was the letter as hoax like believed? Like I said, they believed they were a hoax. But from how it seems, the unknown writer's handwriting did seem to match of an older person because of the shakiness of the words. And the gentleman claimed to be around 82, so that would put him around, you know, in his early 30s, so 32, back in 1951. My question is, though, why would an old man do this as a hoax? What does he gain from it? But if this man's still alive today, then that would put him closer to 100, and it doesn't seem a sealed brown envelope was ever sent, so it does kind of put it as a possible hoax. Like I said, the unknown writer might have just wanted to be involved in the mystery of Beverly's disappearance without having to do anything with it. Beverly's only sibling, her sister, had passed away in 2006. She had kept up trying to figure out what happened to Beverly back in 1951. But fast forward to 2015, an unexpected phone call would be made to the Cleveland Crime Stoppers. The unknown caller would provide some pieces of information about a possible suspect. Whatever tip they gave was investigated, and it seems to have been accurate, and the police said they needed more. But they would even raise the reward money and beg for the caller to call back. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, they went to social media, news, all that, papers, just to say, hey, whoever called, call back. You know, please call back, because we need more. But at the time of this recording, it seems a phone call from an unknown caller has never been made again. So, was that just another hoax? But if they had some interesting information, you wouldn't see it being a hoax. But it, I don't know. It's weird. But will we ever know what happened to Beverly, or will her disappearance always be a mystery that haunts Cleveland, Ohio? But before I end this episode, I want to kind of give my perspective on it. You know, I'm no expert in any of this. You know, it's just a hobby that I do where I research true crime. But from everything that I've read into this case, I strongly believe, like I said, this is my personal opinion, that somebody in that town that she knew took her. Like, that is my strong belief. That somebody that she knew took her, whether it be a male or a female, whatever happened to her, happened to her then. Which, yeah, it's a possibility that a stranger could have picked her up. But from my understanding, like, when that one boy saw her, like, she was close to her house, so she disappeared close to her house. Like I said, it could have been a stranger picked her up, you know, just grabbed her, you know, but I just still think that somebody she knew grabbed her. And I kind of wonder what would have came if they would have searched the houses, like when they're talking about the garages and stuff that they were going to search back in that time. I kind of wonder if there was speculation that it definitely could have been a local. So that's my personal opinion on it. But before I wrap this up, like I said, you can like the Facebook page, and you can also join the group. You know, I love talking with people about true crime, and I'm digging into the next episode, so I'll see you all the next one.